murder by experts. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, Raymond, welcoming you through the squeaking door. Well, we're having a gay musicale here tonight, featuring, of course, only haunting melodies. But I'm afraid none of the performers will get a hand unless it's a cold one. You see, it's so hard to applaud after rigor mortis has set in. But you can come in and set in, too. There are plenty of seats available. And if there's nothing left in the orchestra, we can give you a box.
Ladies and gentlemen, spontaneous as ever, information please continues on its carefree path. And tonight, our experts are...
I'm Don Dupay.
Teresa Kennedy Dupay.
J.B. Fisher.
J.D. Chandler.
Audrey Sherrill.
And?
Special guest star.
Todd Snyder.
Tonight.
Unorganized crime. On murder by experts.
Brought to you by.
Peace! It's what everyone wants!
Peace! It's what everyone wants.
Choose peace.
War is over if you want it.
In 2006, country blues singer Todd Snyder released the song Unorganized Crime on his album The Excitement Plan. It was based on personal experience growing up in Portland, Oregon.
It was a friend of my old man. He came by every couple months or so. With a brown paper bag full of bandit cash. Have a couple of drinks and he would go. He taught me this old dirty fist fight trick, but it only worked about half the time. Black and blue, I was born into unorganized crime.
And a character who was known in those days as Battling Willie Nelson. His real name was Harold Penland, and he was no good.
I'm the one who killed Slick Willie, may he never rest in peace. Everyone around Portland knew he was a lowlife, to say the least.
He thought he was completely protected. He thought nobody could touch him, and he did. That guy did whatever he wanted. Rape.
Yeah.
Theft. He stole from everybody. He raped people, beat people up. He forced women to have sex with him because if they didn't, he would kill their husband or their boyfriend.
Jesus. That's horrible.
He was that, yeah, that's Battling Willie Nelson. He was a real bad guy. Phil's got.
So some kind of prize fighter back in his day. Took his pay and bought the toughest joint in town, where my old man chose to throw his whole life away, chasing cheap cocaine and crazy women around, with Willie the wire wearing, stepped on coke, selling lunch money, pimp of his time. Born into it, I knew that I could do it. There'd be too many suspects to solve the crime, but...
In June 1983, someone entered Penland's home on North Vancouver Avenue, a yellow two-story decorated with bars on the windows and doors, and killed Penland, who was 46, and his 27-year-old wife, Laura. Penland was hanging by his ankles from special exercise equipment. There were literally too many suspects to solve the crime.
Slick Willie, I'm here to put this to rest. I'm the one and it wasn't easy. I ain't afraid to confess.
In the early 70s, he was running the valet parking at Bill Moe's Gold Coin. And they would make copies of people's keys and burglarize their apartments after they parked their cars in his lot.
every fancy car in town for gangsters was always parked with a grill facing toward the street. Back in those days. Well, you know, and then when they got through there, they'd go out to the three-star on Barber, and then they'd go out to the White Elephant in Beaverton. They just make, you know, that's the gangster loop. Yeah. They had bars on the windows and bars on the doors, so there was no sign of forced entry. So
it was a dope house.
And somebody went there to buy dope. And, oh, yeah, I recognize. Hi, come on in. And, you know, bang, bang, you're dead.
Yeah, well, and that's what Phil said. He said it was pretty clear that they let the killer in, so it was somebody that they knew and trusted.
That's why I think that the cops know more than they probably did the report, because that kind of dope operation, the cops are going to know at least where some of the dopes come from.
Well, Phil thought the real problem with solving that case were too many suspects. Well, Phil Stanford told me about the hanging upside down, that he had, what was that? That exercise system?
Didn't they have weight boots?
Something like that. And he was hanging upside down. His wife let the killer in and killed the wife, and then Harold was killed while he was hanging upside down.
So they did torture him?
Yeah, I don't know if they tortured him. It seemed like a pretty straightforward execution.
Okay.
That I kicked his back door down, let myself in, stuck a gun up to the side of his head. He turned around so fast and knocked it out of my hand that for a second there I thought that I was dead. But I know this old dirty fist fight trick, and it works about half the time. I still can't believe he didn't see it coming, but he didn't. Unorganized crime. Unorganized crime. Unorganized crime.
Too many people wanted him dead.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
That's definitely true. And maybe some cops.
Maybe some cops, yeah.
That's similar to the Ronald Holbert death.
I don't remember Ronald Holbert.
He's in the book, the black man that
Ronald
was murdered.
Holbert, yeah. Okay.
Because he had so many enemies.
It'd be interesting to see what did he do. I want to look at the report.
I would like to see that stuff,
too. I want
to
see the report. I want to see what that guy did.
But the cold case squad has got it, so it's like this stuff. You have to find somebody who will let you look at it. And I don't think anybody from the Portland Police Bureau is going to let you look at anything, Don.
Oh, no. That ain't
going to
happen.
I need to find out more about Elmo Jacks, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He was an associate of Elkins in the early days.
Was
unorganized crime. Unorganized crime. Unorganized crime. We'll be right back.
In 1962, when they were both young men, Officer Don DuPay met Harold Penland at a traffic stop. We'll be right back to tell you more about it after this message.
On Murder by Experts.
Murder by Experts.
It's time for a change in Portland.
The city of Portland is going to get more diverse. When I say diverse, I'm not just talking about racially, but diverse in every area. This is a city about acceptance, not tolerance. I learned this from my family, but it was confirmed by the people here in Portland. My type of campaign, they call it grassroots. You know, it is grassroots. I call it a community campaign. I'm just a community person. I'm just a person that lives in the neighborhood that just likes to try to make things better, not just for the community, but for my family. I don't feel that the people are getting what we're paying for. We know where we're at right now, and we're at what right now because of what people did for us 50 years ago. What do we need to start doing today that is going to help our children and our grandchildren 50 years from now? And I'm not interested in being like any other city but Portland. I'm not just satisfied with whatever I've got done already. It's always going to be not what I've done for you, what can I do for you? The biggest way people can help me is, one, go to fredstewart.com and please donate.
Fred Stewart for Portland City Commissioner. www.fredstewart.com.
History isn't free!
Ladies and gentlemen, everywhere in America, history is under attack.
History has to be as accurate as you can make it, so you need a number of versions of it so that people can understand it in like a, you know, in a holistic way.
History isn't free.
Support your local historian.
Support your local historian.
Support your local historian.
www.patreon.com/JDChandler. It doesn't take very much, and it really makes a difference to us. That's www.patreon.com/JDChandler. This is the Peace and Love Network.
I want to know a little more about Elmo Jacks. Do you know? Phil told me that he had a club called Elmo's.
Yeah, I don't know, about 90th and Sandy.
90th and Sandy, okay. Yeah.
It's where the freeway goes through now.
Okay.
It's where the club was, and it was a hangout for gangsters, and he worked for Elmo. It was a jumping-going club, because yeah. The dope and the girls and anything went. You know, the night he ran to follow me was we got messed up or got drunk. He was drunk for sure. And he took Elmo's wife's Cadillac.
He did like to steal.
I saw the knife coming at me. It was in the hand of the intoxicated driver of a late model Cadillac I had stopped for reckless driving in the early morning hours of my working shift. I was a Portland police officer assigned to the traffic enforcement in southeast Portland. I was in my patrol car, finishing a traffic accident report, while parked at Southeast 72nd Avenue and Woodstock, when the cab flashed by me, blowing the stop sign right in front of me at Woodstock. The car was weaving and speeding, heading south out of the city limits in excess of 50 miles an hour. I clocked the speeder at 65 through the second stop sign at Southeast Duke Street.
Shaking stone.
I was able to overtake and stop the Cadillac in Southeast Clavelle, just outside the city limits of Portland. I jerked open the driver's door and found the male driver to be a nattily dressed with slacks, dress shirt, sports coat, and reeking of alcohol. "I can't go to jail," he exclaimed, wriggling out of my grasp as I attempted to take him into custody. "The hell you're not," I yelled back at him, pushing him hard against the fender of the cab. Then, out of nowhere, I saw the knife flashing in the streetlight headed for my gut. The driver was about my size, but hard as a rock and extremely powerful for his size. I avoided the knife and pulled my gun as he ran east
across Southeast 72nd Street. I fired one shot at the weaving and bobbling knife wielder, but he disappeared into the darkness of the residential area. Frustrated, I searched the car and found it registered to Elmo Jacks, a local Portland gangster of note that operated a nightclub called Elmo's on Northeast Sandy Boulevard. The search of the area by myself and other officers failed to find my assailant. I towed the Cadillac, wrote the necessary reports, and completed my shift. The following day, I was contacted by Portland police detectives who told me the driver was one William Penland, a professional boxer whom they had arrested at his home in North Portland. When they took him into custody, they found a bullet hole in the sports coat he had been wearing, a mere 3 inches to the left, and my bullet would have hit him in the back. In retrospect, we were both lucky that fateful night. I didn't get stabbed, and Penland didn't get shot. Both Penland and his wife were murdered in 1983 gangland style after both were shot in the head and in the heart at their residence on North Vancouver Avenue. He died a horrible death, murdered in his own home. Would he have been better off if I'd have killed him? I don't know. Fate has a way of evening the score.
Phil Stanford mentioned that the city would have been better off if you killed him.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, you're right. But I've been stuck with it.
Yeah. Unorganized crime. Unorganized crime.
Murder by experts.
Murder by experts.
And now a word from our sponsors.
Good evening. Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror. These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. America and our friends and allies join with all those who want peace and security in the world. And we stand together to win the war against terrorism.
Isn't 14 years enough? End the war.
Peace. It's what everyone wants.
Choose peace.
War is over if you want it.
It's about family.
I know this smile I'm wearing can't conceal the intensity
and coming home
of all the closeness and resentment. Thank you.
Pandora's box.
An explosive musical.
Down there. Don't go in the basement. You don't know what you're gonna find down there. But for my peace of mind. Please stay out of the air.
Coming soon.
In the army, and I knew a lot of mud. Some of my souvenirs are toxic, some of them might explode.
Next on Murder by Experts.
Wow. One of the things that we haven't talked about yet is the viciousness of the murder.
That's what I think. I think that's the only thing that would make her, you know, go with him. Is like, if he told her, I left my wife, we're going to be together, meet me at the train, and
stuff her in the back of the car, let's go.
And Vane Gardane from the Oregon State Police in Milwaukee was sort of the spokesperson at that point, talking about the case. And he characterized it as not only unsolved, but also as perplexing that the only part that it ever turned up was the torso, and the head and other body parts had never been found. So that was 1969.
So they were cleaning the story up. I wonder if the evidence had disappeared by that point. Because
I think that where the investigation falls apart today with the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office is because they didn't know the players. They didn't know about Jim Purcell.
Yeah.
They didn't know about...
you mean the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office
the
today?
The Clackamas County Sheriff's Office.
They
now
know nothing about the concepts.
They didn't know anything about the players back then. They didn't really understand who had motive.
Right.
They weren't looking at other law enforcement as having motive to kill this woman.
Yeah. But I figured even if it turns out that we disprove Anna Schrader as the torso victim, that's okay too.
It'll never be solved legally, right. But I really think those two photos, the skull and Anna Schrader in the courtroom, those are just so compelling. River.
On Murder by Experts.
Murder by Experts.